everyone, and welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. We are so glad you are with us tonight, or if you're listening on this recorded session, either on our Facebook channel, our YouTube channel, or on the podcast, maybe even. So we just want to thank you for joining us, and if you're joining us live, we want you to be part of our conversation. So make sure you get your comments, your questions as we're talking, and we're going to talk about some mom care stuff tonight, and so we just want you to really be involved and be part of this discussion. And my guest tonight is Stephanie Buckwalter. Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you, Peggy. I'm so happy to be here. This is very exciting.
Stephanie is the owner of Art of Special Needs Parenting, and I'll have her talk a little bit about that as she gets started and some of her background. But our whole month, we're focusing on health. And so we've focused on kids' health and teens' health already, and we focused on behavioral health last week. And this month, we're focusing on mom health. And then I'm taking a healthy break, and I'm taking 2 weeks off. So there'll be some very special things, though, on our podcast that's coming out the next 2 weeks. Presentations that I have done, and I ripped the audio off for you. So
nice.
Don't worry. There's things coming out on the podcast still those weeks that I'm on vacation. But the lives will not happen for a couple weeks. So Stephanie, we're talking about self-care is healthcare, and just maybe some things that we as special needs moms forget about. And so I'm excited about that. And I also want to thank Right Shop for sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. We'll hear more from them about halfway through this broadcast, but thank you, Right Shop, for doing that. And so as we get started, just love for you to tell us a little bit about yourself and your family, and also just why this topic is something you're passionate about. Because I know every time I have a guest on, this, when we kind of narrow down what we want to talk about, it's these things that there's a story behind them, or there's something more that is related to that. So I'd love to hear that, and so would our audience.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so my name is Stephanie Buckwalter. I'm a wife and mother of five kids. I have four boys in five and a half years, and then there was a little bit of a break, and then I had our special needs girl. So I've homeschooled for 15 years, each boy different amounts. We've done a mix of homeschool, private school, and public school in our family, so I've done a little bit of everything. And I'm also a writer and a researcher. So before I did all the homeschooling and the special needs lifestyle, I was a writer. Mm-hmm. I did documentation and training in the corporate world. And I've written books for the school library market. And I've even written one on apraxia. And those are all out on Amazon.
Awesome.
And then my passion is for helping special needs parents. Well, it kind of developed the same way that my passion for writing developed. God basically just put circumstances in my life that tempted my natural inclinations to follow this path that he had laid out for me, that there's no way on earth I would have picked this for myself. So it just seemed to fall into place. I'll explain the writer path, because then the special needs path kind of follows the same thing. Looking back, I didn't realize it right away, but looking back, I grew up in a small town, and we had horrible math teachers, but great English teachers. And so everyone that graduated from my high school, my little graduating class of 77 people, everyone that graduated knew how to read and write. Couldn't do math, but we could all read and write. And then I changed my major in college 5 times because I kept flunking math classes. I flunked business calculus, I flunked science calculus. And so I finally, I was paying for school myself, so flunking these classes was quite expensive. No one was footing this bill. I was like, I can't afford school anymore. That's wasting time, wasting money. So I literally picked up the course catalog, flipped through it, and said, what can I pass all the classes on? And I ended up at a small college, and it was like, they have a literary studies degree. I can read and I can write. I will do that. And so I was like, God was just planning that for me, and I had no clue. And then after that, I moved to documentation training in the corporate world, like I mentioned. And then I had kids. And after two kids, it looked like we weren't going to have any more kids. And people, I grew up in a family of 13 kids, and people were always saying, oh, you should write about that. You should write about that. And I thought, I'll go to a writer's conference. And so I did. And I met someone who became a mentor, and he kind of helped me get started in writing. And that's where I sat for years, just writing a book every few years for the school library market, same publisher. And then I had a special needs daughter. And I also had a child who was a struggling learner. I don't say a lot about him because he's an adult and, you know, it's his life and I don't want to, you know, go there too much. But I did stumble around quite a bit with him in the early days. And then when I had my special needs daughter, all of a sudden I was introduced to this whole world, something occupational therapy, executive function, low muscle tone, and all these terms and things that I had never heard of. So if you have a struggling learner, there's a lot that can be had in the special needs world. So don't shy away from the term special needs, because it's really, there's a lot there that can help you with a struggling learner. And let's see. And then the other thing was I always knew, so I like to write, and I thought the one thing I will never write about is parenting, because I felt so inadequate with my boys. Just all the struggles and the problems and this and that. So I know I can never do that because I'm not that stellar example. So here comes my daughter and special needs, and now I have a website with parenting in the name. So I guess God
Well, you know what? It's not what you, and I've said this in so many of my talks. It's the places that I've done the worst is where I have the most hope to give. And that is the things that people connect with more with me than if I could teach them stuff I read from books, you know, and things that I was good at, because they're like, oh, well, you're good at that. But if you're bad at something and I'm bad at it too, let's connect and share stories.
That's right. So, so that did, that led to my passion now. So now I have, I love helping special needs parents find their footing so they can stop reacting to everything being thrown at them, like I did for 10 years plus, and then chart a deliberate course for the future. It really took me 10 years to get my act together. And I mean, part of it was I had these teenage boys at the time. So at one point we had four teenagers in the house at the same time. And that was a whole mess that was weighing on me too. But even so, 10 years is a long time to be a mess.
Well, and
I didn't do self-care.
Right. And I think one of the hardest things I've had in supporting our community is oftentimes I will ask a question, and I'll ask, like, in our Facebook group or other things, and I'll ask a group or a question towards the mom, and they will answer it towards their child. And it just grieves my heart, because instantly they go to that, oh, well, I know about my child. It's nothing. I am, like, out of the picture as a mom. And so that's why we really want to address this subject tonight, because we want to put you back into that picture and realize that you are an important piece in your family's life, your child's life, and in your life, because we live lives beyond our children. Some of you don't think that.
Well, and that's very true. And I think sometimes people may be saying, no, you don't understand. It may just be for a season. You may have to not be able to focus on yourself, but there will come times when you can. And when you do, we'll be talking about how you can take advantage of that. And the one thing I wanted to say before we even get started on the self-care part is everything you do for yourself is also for your child. So you need to take care of yourself in all areas. And I kind of like to think of it as heart, mind, body, and soul. If you can focus on those at different times, then you'll be taking your baby steps toward getting self-care in around your special needs lifestyle.
Right. And you've kind of taken that heart, mind, body, and soul and put it into like five types of pitfalls that that parents with special needs children tend to fall into, and I loved your list. So I thought we'd just kind of kick off and just have you address the first one, and maybe just how do we get in that that rut, or how do we get out of that rut, and or how do we even recognize that we're in it? Because maybe we aren't even at that point.
Well, because I'm just now coming out of these ruts. So all these things that I'll be talking about tonight, I've lived every one of them. Mm. And the answers didn't always come quickly or easily. But right. By God's grace, here I'm here tonight talking to you, thinking I might have something to offer. So the first one.
I'm sure you do.
Thank you for your vote of confidence. So the first thing is not dealing with the cognitive dissonance of raising a special needs child. And I'm going to explain what that is. So if you're not familiar with the term. So the technical definition is you're holding two conflicting beliefs, attitudes, or desires that cause mental discomfort. As I'll give you a couple of examples, I'll start with an easy one from my life. Cognitive dissonance can also occur. Well, it occurs when you're, my main thought is, when you have your special needs child is here today, and they have, they're maybe developmentally behind, or they may need a lot of therapy, and that's who they are today. But as special needs parents, we are constantly thinking about the future. What can I do? How can I help them? How can we get this, you know, how can I move this leg to get, you know, just to help with therapy and things like that. Right. So it also occurs though, like when your household is really chaotic. And I found myself doing this. You start repeating to yourself over and over, I don't care, I don't care, I don't care about things that you really used to care about. And for me, that was books. Writer, homeschooler, 11 bookshelves full of books. I love books. And with my four boys, we had all these childhood favorites and homeschool favorites. Right. And then my daughter comes along. And she had some kind of innate need to chew on paper. And so first it was the board books, and then it was the other books. It didn't matter where we hid them or got them out of her sight. She would always find them somewhere over time. And she chewed up the corners of almost every book in her house. So, and every time I found one, I simply told myself, I don't care. I don't care. It's not important. It's a book. Okay. When really, secretly, I did care. Yeah. And that's cognitive dissonance, right? That's like the perfect example. It's like secretly, I cared. So when you start finding yourself saying, I don't care. I don't care. So the solution for that kind of cognitive dissonance is to get your two realities to meet in the middle. And I kind of shared about how I did that for the books. It meant I had to appreciate all the good times where I was reading it with my sons. And then I had to appreciate that in some weird way that I will never be able to understand. Those books served a purpose for my daughter too. They were not the reading and appreciating the content, the written content, but somehow they met a need in her life, and I just had to get over myself and accept that. So that was, and that's hard. So that's the idea of when you have cognitive dissonance, trying to get the two halves to meet somewhere in the middle.
Right. And that can take a long time too, because I mean, it's not like something that just pops in your head of, well, this is how, you know, this and this, you know, these two polar opposites can somehow come together. But it's finding those tiny little threads that you found with the books, just to bring some sort of connection and stability to that reality.
Yeah. Now, not everyone has a bookworm like that in the house, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about the one I was talking about before, where you have the future, because it's so hard constantly not to be a therapist and a researcher and a protector and an advocate every minute of every day around your kid. And that's when we start losing ourselves. And we also forget about enjoying the moment, like dwelling in the now, right now, not worrying, like I said, like turn this leg or help this or like lean this way or, you know, all these different things that we do. And practicing making sounds, throwing the ball just right. It's a mental stressor, and it just puts distance between you and your child. We don't even realize it. And I actually had a friend point that out to me. I was kind of talking to her about this one day, and she has a special needs child also. And she was saying, you know, it does, because your kid can pick up on that, that your, you know, your concern is about them and for them, but it can drive a little wedge, a tiny wedge in your relationship. So we want to try to avoid that.
We have a comment from one of our viewers. It says, so true. I'm so busy trying to keep up with my kids. It's hard to take time for me. My hobbies are even for them. And Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That
and
is.
It says, now my doctor says I most likely have carpal tunnel and most likely will need surgery, recovery time with that. Have to take a break. Yeah. Well, then that's unfortunate as we get to that point where we are forced to take a break. And we don't even realize it at the point where, you know, the first part of the question is, my hobbies are my kids. That should be the big wake-up call.
That's right. There's something wrong there. So the way around the cognitive dissonance one with your kid, and the same thing with the hobbies, we're going to cover the one that fits more with the hobbies in a little bit.
Okay.
And so hopefully there'll be something there for you. And for the cognitive dissonance and the disconnect with your child and always trying to be a therapist. Mm-hmm. So it's really one of the most normal joys of parenting that we rob ourselves of is just enjoying our children.
Yes,
and I can
so
give another
true.
Quick example. I have a grandbaby now and he's just learning how to crawl. And the doctor's aware one of his hips is a little bit out of position. And so he's learning how to crawl and he's dragging one of his legs behind him. Mm-hmm. And so when he's crawling, I'm there, I'm trying to like get that little leg underneath him and like show him how to walk and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the time, I'm simply enjoying him, you know, laughing and talking and feeding and playing with something. And I had forgotten about that because with my daughter, I don't think I did that. I didn't enjoy all those moments like I could have. I was always, you know, fixing the leg kind of thing. So we rob ourselves of one of the just regular joys of parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really have to force yourself out of fix it mode. That's what I call it.
Right.
And let your child be who they are for a time every day, resisting that urge to do something because you know they need it. And that one little move for that 10 or 15 minutes is, you know, not doing it is not going to probably change your child's future in a drastic way.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take a break from being mama fix it, your child feels your acceptance and they feel that enjoyment that you have.
Yes.
And you know, it's creating good brain chemicals, and I'm all about brain stuff too, which we're not talking about tonight, but if you're interested in neurological stuff, I'm all about that. And so you're also taking care of your heart and you're feeling your child's love tank all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of good that comes with that, but it's very, very difficult to do in the middle of day-to-day living.
Yeah. I found that having like reminders, things that like if I saw it and caught my attention and I needed to refocus, whether it was just a really brightly colored post-it note that I stuck on a wall or, you know, a door or inside a cupboard. And when I opened it, oh, that's right. I'm supposed to just not be, you know, homeschool mom or not be, you know, the nagging parent. And I'm just supposed to have fun. I would put them inside like board games. So when my kids would bring board games and say, "Mom, you want to play a game?" It would stare at me and I go, "Oh, sure." And that'd be like the last thing I really wanted to do. But it was just like, okay, this means you're supposed to take a break. And then I would, but if you need those physical reminders like me, that's
well, and that's really good. Your kids will help you. If you listen to them, your kids will help you know when they need more of you than, the therapy, the inner therapist.
Yes, exactly. They probably need a lot less of that.
No offense to all the therapists listening in.
Yes, but it's, yeah. So that was the first point. What is the second one?
This one is really big, and this is one that I've struggled with, and I'm just now probably never will totally come to grips with, but I'm really coming to grips with it now. And that's not changing your lifestyle to fit your new reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this trips up a lot of us because being a special needs parent, and in the beginning especially, it can be just one big heartache. It hurts and we grieve. And the last stage of grief is acceptance, and it's a nice place to be, and hopefully we eventually get there.
Mm-hmm.
But once we've gone through the grief cycle, I think a lot of us are just so happy to be out of it that we kind of stop. But there's another process that comes behind that one, and we don't realize it or don't even have the energy to consider it. And that's that we need to change because our world around us has changed. Mm. We have to change how we relate to the world and others around us. Yeah. And what that mostly means is we're going to have new boundaries and new priorities. And that is really hard to do because it takes a lot of emotional energy to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You're changing yourself and your dynamics and everything, but not in a bad way, but you're adapting. Yeah. And mm-hmm. It's just like becoming a new parent. You know, really, you don't know what that is. You know, everybody tells you, oh, you're having a baby. Wait, you know, talk to me 3 months afterwards, you know, because it's like you can't explain it. It's just going to happen and your life is going to be upside down. And it's like even more so with the special needs diagnosis. And it does it. It is that grieving process added to that change. And who am I in the middle of this? And you know, when we come out, though, and I'm sure you feel the same way, is I'm a better person for this and going through this process with my child because I've learned things about me that I didn't know. And I've had to struggle with things that I buried, I didn't want to deal with, but I had to. And it is a long process to go through that.
Yeah, so I did too.
What are yours? Yeah, I'll let you finish that.
Oh, I was just to say for me too, and that thing that came up to the surface was rejection, dealing with rejection, because this was like intensive rejection, just, you know, walking in the grocery store and be rejected by other shoppers and, you know, little things like that. And just looking at, you know, history of how I responded to that was kind of unhealthy based on some other rejection that I perceived. So we'll talk about that too.
Yeah.
Perceived stuff. Mm-hmm. So on the, but you don't have to stay there. So you can shift from reactionary mode to taking control of your life again. And so I would say start with the two things I talked about, like setting boundaries. So that means doing things like staying away from people who are constantly negative toward your child or your choices. And that could be friends, yes. church members, family mm-hmm. members, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Sometimes even your spouse, and that one's really hard to get do with. So this one, I'm not really talking about spouses here. I'm talking about more the people that you you can cut out of your life, you can guard from in your life. And so limit your exposure as much as possible until you're more confident in your situation. It may not have to be forever, but initially, a lot of parents have to do that. They have to get that cushion so that they can function and they can work out their own stuff.
I like that word that I never even thought about, you know, it is a cushion. It's that space between where I'm at and where other people are at. And you need to have that vacuum. So there's not all the negative coming in because you got enough to deal with inside already.
That's true. And that's so hard to get too. Mm-hmm. And so if you recognize where you are in the grief cycle, you can keep working towards resolution as far as boundaries. And then you can also carve out as much as possible some respite time for yourself to recover and renew. Now, if you're constantly feeling the need to escape, like when you're alone, when you finally get away, if you're having from what you have, and if you've got that I'm just escaping feeling, then you're probably in survival mode.
Yeah.
And it's not a fun place to be. So I would implore you to reach out to someone for help. Find someone who's a good listener, not just an advice giver or a fixer, because you know, what you need is a, now it's my turn. Okay. So you need someone who will just listen. And then I'm going to go back a little bit to the respite time. If you really, because a lot of people don't have the support network they need in place, especially in the early days, is if once your child goes to sleep, and even if you and your husband can get away, have someone come and babysit while the child is sleeping. Mm-hmm. And that way they don't have to worry about all the special needs care. Like my daughter is still nonverbal. And so even finding a sitter now, because she's doing pretty good with her AAC device, so she can communicate through that. But there was a a stretch of years where no one would babysit for because they were afraid something would happen and they wouldn't know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And so the way to get around that is to use sleep time. I know when they sleep, you want to sleep. But that's one way we found to get some respite if we couldn't get it formally by having someone come over.
Right. Yeah, we would even have dinner after the kids went to bed. I'd have a fancy dinner made, and everybody was in bed, and we took out the good china and sat at the dining room table, which we never used, and, you know. But, yeah, just even if we didn't have to get a babysitter for that. But it was just a dedicated time for our marriage, and, yeah. But, yeah, it's you have to be creative, and... definitely reaching out. And I think we tend to prejudge people before we reach out to them. And, Stephanie's feed broke up a little bit. I'm hoping and praying that it'll stay constant. But, we'll just keep going on.
Okay, well, actually, yours disappeared for a little bit, too, for me. But that could have just been mine.
Yeah, it could be from your feed. Too.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. So the other part of, we're talking about setting boundaries and then setting new priorities. So depending on the severity of your child's difficulties, you may have to completely rethink your future. And you don't have to do it all at once. That's the good news. It'll come.
That is a very, very good point.
Over time. Because I know one of the most searched terms is future planning. Special needs future planning or special needs trust. That's a huge search term.
Yeah.
And at some point, yes, it's appropriate to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on your personal situation, your health, all those things, it is something you do need to look at. And we have done that, thankfully. We did that a few years ago, but it wasn't the first thing we did. So we kind of eased into that. And your new priorities will reflect your new future when you get there.
Right.
And I'm not saying give up on your child at an early age, because everybody wants to be that mama bear and, fix it. They want to fix it.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you can with, if you find, you have the right therapy, God's grace, God's planning, all these things work together. But for some of us, those things like wanting your daughter to talk, I don't say never because I still have hope that she will one day talk because, kind of comes and goes. But so you don't want to give up on your child. There's always hope.
Mm-hmm.
But as time passes, you may have to face certain realities that you're going to have a different future than you had hoped. And don't be afraid to embrace that, because I don't think we were meant to be miserable all our lives. And I know, I actually know people who have children who just every day is a battle behavior, and they're adults. And so they're not little kids with behavior problems. They are adults with behavior problems. And, it's just killing them to think about having to put them in a home.
Mm.
But they would rather persevere with their child at home. And, and that's good. That's their decision. That's what they want to do.
Right.
So, but they're embracing it. That's where they are with their child, and they're embracing that. And then what your child is like now is not necessarily what they're going to look like 5 to 10 years from now, especially if they're younger. There are children who, I think my favorite book, I think, that I've read recently is Ito in Autism Land. And it's about a young man. He's nonverbal, had autism. And around the time he was 12 years old, he had severe autism, so like the hand flapping and everything.
Yeah.
And he learned how to use touch typing through the SOMO rapid prompting method, and he learned how to communicate. And so he started writing blog posts, and those were eventually collected into a book, which is the one I just mentioned. And he talks about all the things that were going on in his head while he couldn't communicate. And so anyone who has a nonverbal child, I highly recommend that book, just so you can get some insight whether your child has autism or not. Mine doesn't, so. But it's still an insight into her mind and what could potentially be going on there. And I always say assume intelligence, because this kid was perfectly intelligent.
Yes.
And so he was, and he talked about, the perpetual kindergarten of special ed. And because he was in the public school system, and by time he got, so 12, that would have been around sixth grade. So that's when he learned how to communicate. So a few years later, by the time he was ready for high school, he was mainstreamed in almost all of his classes. And he said he still had severe autism. He still was, you know, hand flapping. It didn't change any of that.
Right.
But it had opened up his mind and being able to communicate. So never give up on your child. There's no reason to think that, you know, this is how it's going to be forever.
I have 10 adopted siblings with special needs, and three of them were nonverbal. And my parents, my mom learned how to do the eye gazing technique and communication. And everybody thought they were vegetables until they started communicating. And, you know, even my one sister who only had a brainstem, she knew exactly what was going on all the time.
Wow.
And it, I mean, the neurosurgeons were just shocked. But we give, like you said, we give up too easy. These kids have something going on. We just have to connect with them in the right way. And it takes a lot of time, takes a lot of creativity, a lot of prayer for us as parents, and patience. Because we just don't know how that's going to happen.
That's my secret dream, is to develop things to help parents with kids who have communication problems to really reach them, their heart, their mind, their body, and their soul, and, you know, pull out what's in them that's got to be frustrating for the kids. And every time I get really frustrated, I always think, you know, as on my really bad days, as frustrating as this is for me, I cannot imagine what it's like for her.
Exactly. Yeah, so true. Well, this has been a great discussion so far. We're halfway through already, and Stephanie's still got three more points, so we're going to get back to that soon, but we're going to hear from our sponsor first. I'm going to give Stephanie a little break off the camera, and so I'll have you back in just a little while, and we'll continue this discussion. And right now, we're going to hear from Right Shop, who is our sponsor, and I will tell you a little bit about them, because they are gracious to support this broadcast and also our outreach and our nonprofit. So Right Shop asks, how are your homeschool writing lessons going lately? Are there tears of frustration or long minutes staring at a blank piece of paper because I don't know what to write about? Well, here's the solution, Right Shop Curriculum. Finally, a writing program that understands the challenges of teaching writing. Right Shop has options for kindergarten all the way through high school. With engaging step-by-step lessons, Right Shop gives students the necessary building blocks of the writing process so there's zero frustration. And Right Shop not only teaches kids how to write, it shows you how to teach. You'll learn how to guide them through the writing process and inspire even the most reluctant writer. Parents rave about the results. Sherry in Florida says, I'm so pleased with Right Shop. My eighth grader, who was lukewarm about writing and really didn't write too well, is blossoming. Haley in California says, thank you so much for Right Shop. It has been a pleasure to teach this curriculum, and the results are phenomenal. Our son went from hating writing to asking for more. So visit rightshop.com. You'll see their website down below on the screen if you're watching, and you can take a placement test to find out what level best suits your child, tween or teen. With Right Shop, teaching writing has never been easier. So thank you, Right Shop, for your sponsorship and also for being a partner with us at Sped Homeschool. You can find more information about them also on our website at spedhomeschool.com. So we're going to have Stephanie back, and we're going to continue this conversation. It's been so filled with so much good information. A lot of things that happen in our lives as special needs parents that we don't talk about, and we probably don't even realize are happening until they've come out of your mouth, and I think our audience is going, oh yeah, I can relate to that and that and this, you know, and you're giving a lot of really good insight. I just have to encourage you, because you said, I don't know what I have to share, but you do have a lot to share. So
thank you. Hard one.
Yeah. Well, so isolation is our next topic, isn't it?
Yeah. And, did you want me to go on?
Just you can share. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so isolation can be real or perceived. And that means where people are really pushing us away or ignoring us. The other one would be perceived, where you just feel like nobody's on your side. And so you kind of shut down. And one thing I've learned about that is I was in a church environment where it was really difficult for me, because I had that perception that everyone around me was not caring. Now, in general, most people weren't interested in engaging, but there were several people. And so over time, you know, I came to let them in our lives. Mm-hmm. But what I realized was, but there was one lady who came in, and she was a military family. So they were just there for a few years and they moved on. But while she was there, she was teaching Sunday school, and she made sure to train the other kids how to work with, you know, how to interact with my daughter with special needs. Mm-hmm. And that really opened up a lot of opportunities in the church for my daughter to have relationship, and even the parents. She must have been talking behind the scenes saying, you don't help her. But it's, and we honestly, as the parent, we don't really have the energy or the wherewithal to do that. But right. It really helps if you can provide training for the people around you, you know, help them know how to relate to you. Because think about it, before you had a special needs child. If you came upon someone who was in a wheelchair, using a talking board, couldn't really talk, what was your reaction? It wasn't that you didn't like the person, that you wouldn't talk to the person, that you didn't want to be around the person. It's different, and you don't know what to do. And so you just kind of freeze or pull back. And so as a special needs parent, one of the things we can really learn how to do for isolation is to invest in a few, it doesn't have to be a lot of people, but a few people around you to help them learn how to relate. Like in a church is a perfect example. At a family gathering, you know, if you have a lot of family around, try to get one or two of those people to learn how to interact, and then just natural relationships, they'll start sharing it with other people. So if you do that investment, but let's face it, isolation is really easy because you don't have to worry about people's stares and accusations and at the grocery store. You don't have the opportunity to share, to compare your child's development to their peers, which was a big thing for me. That's always like, even now sometimes. But the real problem is that when you're isolated, it really leads to destructive attitudes. And I could think of four of them just off the top of my head. The Lone Ranger complex, where you have to do it all. Depression, which I was there. Self-pity, in there too. And then blame shifting, where you want to blame someone else. You want to blame the doctors, or you want to blame this. And I mean, in some cases, there is something that happened that deserves blame, or a person or a circumstance deserves blame. But other times we want to blame God for all of this. And so we're going to talk about that more towards the end. But it's really hard because isolation, you don't have anyone correcting your thinking. You're caught in it.
You're the expert right there. Yeah. In the swirling tornado. Yes, that's so true.
So some of the ways, there are ways to get out of it. Not easy and not fast. But one of them is what I talked about, like training the people around you, because interacting with others is painful, and you have to deal with your shattered dreams, and that's painful. And then these are losses that need to be grieved, and grieving is a private thing. And so that's automatically isolating, and no one can truly understand our grief. So again, that by its very nature, that's just an isolation opportunity right there. So one thing we can learn how to do besides training others around us is learn how to grieve with grace. And what I mean by that is allowing others into our lives, even though they can't help us with those painful things that we're grieving, because they can't understand them. They won't ever understand them. But if we can kind of isolate that part of our pain and let them help with all the other things that they can relate to and understanding. Because, you know, they have households that get messy. They have kids that disobey. They have, you know, bills that need to be paid. There are all kinds of things that people are, you know, cooking. All these other things, going to doctor's appointments, even though they don't go as nitty as we do. But they can. But there are other areas where you can let people in, even while you're grieving. And so that's what I mean by grieving with grace. That's a huge... huge help if you can figure that out. And then one other thing is to salvage some of your relational energy, I guess is the best way to put it, to build a team to help you through the life of special needs parenting. Now, at first, unfortunately, that team is probably made up of very expensive people. Like, you're like paying them to be on your team. That's what bugged me the most. I was like, really? How come everything has to cost money? So, you know, you're paying for doctors and therapists and specialists and, you know, you may have in-home caregivers, nurses, all these things. And over time, so you want to expand. I mean, that's necessary in the beginning. Mm-hmm. We had that for, you know, a good year or two where we're so busy. Like, when my daughter first got her diagnosis, she was 2 months old. And she didn't really, we first noticed there was a problem. She was 2 months old. And so that month three of her life, we had 16 doctor's appointments in 31 days.
Wow.
And they were not all the same doctors. She was like a little hot potato. It's like, well, here, we don't want to deal with you. And no one was taking it. It was kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. That's another story. So over time, though, you want to try to expand your team to people who are going to support you, support your heart, mind, body, and soul again. And one person probably won't be supporting all of them. So it may be, your husband with your heart, because y'all are so close and y'all kind of experiencing the same thing. Although men grieve differently than women.
That's
like a whole nother topic for another time. But trying to work out that where you're not, you know, understanding how each other grieves. Anyway, and there may be, you know, for your mind, it may be for me, I like to read. Excuse me. And I like to write and I like to research. And so I do a lot of research for my daughter. And I think a lot of it, I may do so much because I enjoy it and it feeds my soul, really, and my mind and then body. So, and you may have an exercise buddy. So heart, mind, body, and soul is not all one person. One person really can't do that. And the team may also change over time.
Yeah.
So you won't have the same friends and people forever. And then in the long term, your family needs you to be a complete person. So taking the time to build these relationships and to stay out of the isolation bubble, the isolation cushion, they really need that from you. So don't feel bad about taking time to do these things. And you've got hopefully years and none of it's going to be easy. So just take those little bits of time to build those relationships.
And chip away at that isolation as you can, I guess, you know, that's, you're not going to find 10 best friends right away, you know, and then, like you said, you know, you're going to transition from doctors to good friends. And I think we all want to be at that point where I just have all the good friends, but I've got to be at the point where I'm with the experts and the doctors and the people that need to teach me the things I need to know as well from a professional point of view, and then work in that personal support.
Actually, I saw my daughter's OT so much, and actually my son, we had used her for my son, and then we transitioned to my daughter, and you know, I saw her every week for years, and we eventually became good friends and said, now we'll go out and do stuff socially.
Yeah.
Even though my daughter doesn't see her anymore. But
I've heard of that with other people too.
Yeah. So maybe your paid friends will become your non-paid friends.
Right, exactly. Well, I know your number four is a huge one and kind of very much related to our title for tonight, Self-Care is Healthcare. It's neglecting our own health. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, because when most people think of self-care, that's the area they think about, the physical and mental health. Mm-hmm. And these are, even though I've mentioned several other ones, we have one more coming.
Yeah.
Physical and mental health are foundational because if you don't feel good physically or you're mentally exhausted, the rest of these aren't going to get any better.
Right.
So you really, you kind of need to start here. You need to be physically and mentally the best you can be to take care of yourself.
Yeah. I came to this realization is that, you know, it's work. It's work to rest. If we try to rest without it being work, it's avoidance. And that was a huge wake-up call
makes sense.
To me, is that I'm just avoiding really trying to be restful by going and watching a show or doing something that is completely void of what I really need.
Ah, the escape.
And, It's escape. Yeah. And that doesn't help us get better.
That's funny. I had the same realization, but the word that came to me was escape. You're right. It just doesn't fill you up. There's nothing in it.
Yeah.
And that's hard. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And so recognizing that your own health plays into the long-term plan of your child's life is important too, because a lot of times, like I said, we just want to escape. We don't want to work at it. But if you think about how hard it is now when your kid's young, or even if they're young adults, there's still more to come. And so taking care of yourself is good. And I'm going to give you some areas where I found that have helped the most. And self-care is a learned skill. So anybody can do this. You don't, no one is born knowing how to take this kind of care of yourself. So you have to become intentional about adding it back into your life. Exercise, because exercise increases the feel-good chemical in your brain, and so it helps boost your mood. And walking can be a great way to get your body moving. Right. It's something you can do with your child. You can use a baby stroller or an adult stroller if your child is older. We have one of those. I picked it up at Salvation Army for much cheaper than you pay buying it online. And it's big enough for adult. And she can, when she was a little bit younger, she still had muscle tone problems and she didn't have the stamina to stay with us. So we started using that and it was great. So we could still get out. And she could walk as she was able to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, mobility, vitality, you can adjust for that and still get your walks in. I personally use an exercise program that's only like 15 minutes a day, and it's designed to get your lymph moving and all that stuff. So your exercise, you should maybe try to have a goal. So if it's just walking, it could be just moving around or going outdoors, getting fresh air with your kid or being in nature. For me, the exercise program that I like, because I've developed some health problems that this exercise program in the past has helped me get rid of, but they came back, so now I'm trying to get rid of them again. But it gets the lymph system flowing, and rebounding. That helps.
Helps with that lymph system.
And this is right. And your goal may be getting that runner's high, so you may want to go running. Not that anyone has time to develop running, but you may. And so if you have an exercise plan, don't just exercise I have to exercise, but have a goal with your exercise, health goal.
Right. Yeah.
Something you love. And like, if you love being outdoors, you know, do walking. You don't have to run. And walking is also good for your special needs child, because I'm all about developmental movement too. The neurology I was talking about earlier and developmental movement. And when you're walking and you're swinging your arms and you're walking your feet, even if your child's gait is off, that movement, that alternating movement, is building neurological connections in their brain.
Connections.
And if you have a treadmill, you can even get them on a treadmill every day for, you know, 15, work up to 30 minutes, and that will improve their neurological organization. And you will notice a difference if you do that over time. So even walking for yourself is just as good, because our neurologicalization goes south too.
We can use it too, exactly.
So, and then I'm going to talk about diet, and I'm going to say the quiet part out loud. Processed carbs are killing you. Okay.
Yes.
They are robbing you of energy, vitality, and the ability to think. And if I could only remove one thing from my diet, that's what it would be, processed carbs. And I'm not saying you have to go on a low carb diet. I'm talking about how they're prepared, because there are no neutral foods. Everything you put in your mouth is either robbing you of health or adding to your health.
Yes.
And processed carbs are robbing you of your health. I tell my kids that all the time. That's why I'm saying it like that, because I'm my boys. And I'm like, because they're all learning about nutrition as, you know, I'm watching their food choices. And I'm like, no, that's robbing you of your health. No wonder why you couldn't wake up in time for work.
Exactly.
So and changing a diet is hard. I know that. And
I had to go all vegan in April, and I cried. I sat in my bathtub and cried when my doctor told me that. But I was diagnosed with cancer in April, and it was hormone fed. So all hormones came out of my diet. So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
But I feel better than I ever have in my life. I just want to encourage you. If, you know, taking carbs, all sugar, and all meats, all dairy products, everything is out of my diet other than vegetables. That's what I eat, and complex carbs. So, but not wheat. So, yeah.
And changing a diet is hard, as Peggy can attest to. But ours, we took ours over months to change our diet. And it didn't even really look different, at, you know, as we were changing it slowly. But now that we removed a lot of the bad things, we don't miss them. But if we had had to remove them all at once like Peggy, that would have been really hard.
Yeah, I would not suggest it.
So, you know, first
my
we
family
took out,
never did it with me. They were like, no way, we're not.
That's the other thing is when you have to take your family with you on this change.
Mm-hmm.
But, because we got rid of sodas first. I just stopped buying them. I'm like, we're not buying sodas anymore. Mm-hmm. Or juice. You know, we're getting rid of the sweet drinks. And we're only going to drink water. And then once we got okay with that, you know, then...
Yeah, one thing at a time. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, and then over time, we've gotten to where we're not putting as much. We still eat some processed carbs. I can't break some of my family members of cereal, but I heard how it was made and processed, and I was I was a believer in not eating it anymore.
Yes.
So then, detox is another one. I heard it described like this by a physician on one of these summit webinar type things. He said, imagine your body's a bucket. I mean, your body has a bucket to hold toxins. And when the bucket gets full, it overflows. And that's when your body starts having, you know, cancer and all these other things going on. And if you can work on detox strategies over time, then you're likely to keep that bucket from overflowing. And I know a lot of people in the special needs community are aware of toxins. And some of them even believe that that causes autoimmune reactions and a lot of the behaviors and things we're seeing.
High metals.
Can be caused by all those things. Mm-hmm. So that's, again, that's another whole topic. There were whole summits on those things.
Right.
But some of the detox strategies that I can, just off the top of my head, because the toxins come in your food, your water, the air, beauty products, textiles in the home, cleaning products. And over time, once things in your life are stable, you can work on cleaning out your body and then slowly cleaning up your environment. And there's all kinds of places on the web, you know, you can start doing that. If you have any questions about that, I can help you find resources. If you want resources about anything I'm talking about, let me know, because I love doing research and I love sharing resources.
I think I wrote a whole series on depression, and that detoxing was one of the things I definitely talked about. And it's something our family's done. My husband even told me after I was diagnosed with cancer, he said, if we wouldn't have gone through the diet changes that we went through, your cancer would have been fatal. Instead of, it's stage one, we can remove it, and then we'll just try to get to the bottom of it. Looking back, I'm so thankful that, you know, I had been detoxing to the point I had. It hadn't gone to my lymph nodes. It hadn't gone, you know, anywhere else. But yeah, it's amazing how your body will store up those toxins so quickly. And
I know, because my daughter's nonverbal, whenever I do anything, nutritional adjustment, detoxing, anything, her speech, at least for a few days or a few weeks, you know, I notice a change and an improvement in it. It's amazing. Her vocalizations.
It's so important. So let's dive into the last of your five, pitfalls or things we need to be aware of that we're not doing to take care of ourselves.
Okay. And let me preface this by saying the reason this is in here is because I've done this. And that is putting your faith in the wrong things. And we're all guilty of it. But the tragedy is that it leads to unnecessary disappointments and even exhaustion when you put your faith in the wrong things. So by that, and when you put your faith in the wrong things, it usually means that God takes a big hit. I believe as a Christian that that's where our strength comes from. And like I said, pitfall number 5. I was in it right there with you. I was in that pit.
Yeah.
And so in effect, we self-sabotage when we put our faith in the wrong things. And the wrong things are basically anything that we think can fix our kids, like doctors, medicines, therapies, our own ability, our own, you know, determination and drive, new technology. And also, I have another one that's not the same as that list. One of these is not like the others. Things you do to gain peace in your household. Because that was one of my big pitfalls. Like, I would sacrifice a lot to get peace in my household. And it wasn't always good for me or my kids for child training or child stability. And faith, when I say put your faith in the wrong things, faith implies that you're worshiping something. And so the question becomes, how do you know what you worship? And I would say you can take a look at where you're making sacrifices, and then what are you hoping to gain by these sacrifices? Because if you're sacrificing to the point of destruction of your own heart, mind, body, or soul, then the thing you're trying to gain is what you're worshiping at that moment. And that was a huge revelation to me because, you know, I'm a researcher and I'm pretty good at it. And so I'm, you know, that's going to save my daughter. I'm going to find that thing and that's going to be it. And God didn't allow me to have that power, that superpower. And so I did that. I, you know, and or this therapy or that doctor or the next best thing. And it's really hard not to fall into those traps. But it's the hardest to acknowledge, but it's the easiest one to fix out of all the pitfalls. Because God's promises are the fix for me. God gives grace abundantly. He gives wisdom when we ask for it with the right motives. These are all right out of the Bible. His mercies are new every morning, both for us and for our children. But sometimes we get so wrapped up in our own stuff, we forget he's there for our children too. He cares about them more than we ever will.
Exactly.
And he is for us, not against us. And so I have like one last thought on faith, and that's we need to recognize that God is at work in us, not just our kids, but he's working us. And unfortunately, especially as a parent, that doesn't feel fun. And I struggled for years, like I said, with all these things, some longer than others. And after 10 years of having faith in the wrong things, I finally came to a place of peace. And it's not pain-free, but it is peace. And it happened when I heard the song, Jesus Bring the Rain by Mercy Me, because there's a line in it that says, if this is what it takes to praise you, Jesus, bring the rain. And so at the end of my personal struggle with having a special needs child is the thought that it doesn't really matter that so many people I know don't seem to have, they seem to have it so much easier than me. But if this is what it takes for me to praise God, then I trust him to be merciful in the process.
That's so true. Yeah. It's oftentimes when I've been on the other side of the phone with parents, I would ask them, where's your peace? Is there a peace in this decision that you're anxious about? And if it's not, drop it. Because God will always provide peace in his path. If it's anxiety led, if it's, you know, fear led, it's not of God. And you got to let it go. So I love that you end with peace, because that's so true. It's our sweet spot as special needs parents, as humans. We have to strive for that.
Thank you. That was a hard word.
Yeah, it is a hard one. I completely agree. So I want you to talk a little bit about your website, The Art of Special Needs Parenting. And for those of you listening on the podcast who can't actually see the website name, it's artofspecialneedsparenting.com. So, yes.
Okay. I just started a year ago, and when COVID happened, the focus immediately went to homeschooling. And as a matter of fact, I have a little freebie out there. You can just go to the website, you'll see it. And it's how to teach your, it's a crash course, how to teach your special needs child at home. And it's got some stuff to help you get started. And I am working on a course, I'll be finished hopefully by the end of this week, on another crash course on how to transition your child from IEP to homeschool. If you're thinking about getting your child out of public school and into homeschooling, this course will help you. I walk through the steps, how to withdraw, you know, file a notice of intent, how to withdraw your child, and then walk you through setting goals and finding curriculum and everything all the way till teaching your first week of school. So
awesome.
And then I'll be adding stuff about self-care now, because I'm trying to switch away from homeschool a little bit and start adding in the self-care. So if you have any questions, there's a sign up bar. If you're interested in the homeschool stuff, there's a little box on the sidebar that you can sign up for just general information.
Okay, awesome. We have another viewer. Emma says, I love that this applies to not just parenting my kids, but also coping with my husband's cancer diagnosis.
Wow.
Everything that you talked about, Stephanie, is our life lessons that we need to learn. Special needs parenting exaggerates those, but it doesn't make us void if we don't have a special needs child, or if we've made it through that phase. When another thing comes up that causes anxiety, we don't have questions, you know, we don't have answers and all those things, we find ourselves back in that same spot. And everything that you talked about tonight is so important, because we do. We isolate ourselves. We try to, you know, look off into the future. We try to do all these same things. And I think you just, you brought it all together so beautifully.
Oh, well, thank you. I've enjoyed being here. And I just have a heart for the special needs parents, because I've been through it, and there's so many that are just starting this journey. And there's help. There's help. Mm-hmm. Peggy's organization especially. I mean, because hers is a conglomerate. I'm just one person, but she has the best of the best in the special needs homeschooling world on her board of directors. And I just, and just going through your site and all the information there, it's so good. It's helped me with my own stuff.
Awesome. Appreciate that. We just do what we can and leave the rest in God's hands. So, well, thank you, Stephanie, for taking time and for sharing with us. I appreciate all that you've had to share. And just thank you to your audience for joining us on this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. Like I said at the beginning, I'm taking 2 weeks off. I'm taking care of myself and I'm going to work a little bit to go to a conference, but then I'm going on vacation. So we'll be back in 3 weeks from tonight, and next month our focus is on therapy, and so we're gonna be doing some interviews. And I think, Stephanie, you have an article coming out on our website next month that is therapy related.
Yeah, working therapy into the homeschool.
Yeah, so all of that's coming up in October here at Sped Homeschool, and we've got a lot still coming up in the next couple weeks, but there won't be any lives for the next 2 weeks. So thank you all for joining us. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you again next time right here on Sped Homeschool Conversations. Bye, everybody.
All right, bye.